The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is sponsored by AIB, proudly backing club and county.
I'm not finished yet, it took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing asses for f***ing 10 years.
All right, you're welcome along to the GAA Hour. We're back after Christmas. Happy New Year to you lads. The usual crew is here, Conan and Connor. How was the Christmas? It's too late to say how was the Christmas. That was last week's show. We chose not to do that.
10th of January, well, we move on.
Yeah, let's move on. It's nonsense. The Christmas trees are down. Yeah. All that nonsense is behind us. Let's just move forward.
It's back to any plans for the weekend?
Because yeah. We're back now. It's January. It's silly season. And it's less complain about the issues facing the GAA month. It's pretty much the same every year. Since I started in media, the year has pretty much followed the same kind of schedule every single year. This is a championship structures yeah. time. This is an overtraining time.
That's not
of
a coincidence,
year.
Really. You bringing these issues.
This is, it follows the same path every year. So let's first start about on the Mick O'Dwyer documentary the other night, because it was fantastic and it got rave reviews. And it made me think straight away, why don't RT do more of these shows? Like, I mean, they have all that historic footage. It's easy for them to, I don't know how easy it is for them to do it, but I can't imagine it's that hard when, like, we're desperate for, if we had RT's library of footage we could do so much more, you know, but they have that and you just love to see them doing more. But Mikko came across really well. Not very self-deprecating, Mikko. He was never really very self-deprecating. Like, I mean, everything he does turns to gold and he'd paint a picture of himself. But, like, I mean, some of the parts, like, were a little bit emotional. Like, I'm totally hooked on the game. If I died in Croke Park now, I would be happy. Mm. Like, I'm addicted to it. I've been on it. He's actually talking about being on it, like, you know, yeah. being on heroin or being, I've been on it now for 80 years or getting his first football and fighting. There was some beautiful, beautiful parts in it.
Him saying he felt sick after not winning in 1982 All-Ireland. Like, I never thought I'd feel yeah. sorry for someone who had just won 4 All-Irelands in a row, but he actually still felt his pain even like 35 years later or whatever it was. Like, you know, just, he remembered every little detail of Offaly getting that last minute goal against him, and there was that real emotional part as well. It was actually just sort of summed him up where he's talking about he can't play the accordion anymore, yeah. but he could still catch a high ball if he came yeah. at him, like, yeah, him. Yeah. And he's still doing the actions of it and thinking about catching a high ball, and it is just ingrained in
him. But like he said, he was a marvellous fielder of the ball. There's one thing I remember from Mikko. He loved fetchers. He absolutely loved, like, that's why he loved the Bomber Liston. He loved lads who could catch the ball. He's obsessed with it, and it didn't surprise me when he says I could still catch a high ball, because this is his yeah. this is what he loves in Gaelic football, is a man that can go up and fetch a ball.
Yeah, it was probably Clancy and Noel Garvin that would have been playing under.
Oh, Clancy, he loved the two of them. Yeah. He loved the three. He put Garvin full forward then when Donaghy went in full forward yeah. and he wanted him to do that, and Garvin wasn't really able to do it.
But that was it. It was the bits that I didn't know about Mikko that I found most interesting. Like, his, where he used to charge people to play with the football yeah. when he had the first football.
That does not surprise me.
Village of Kerry. And even the commercialism around the Kerry team in the 90s. The first thing I thought with Adidas, remember Kerry had those Adidas jerseys around 96, 97?
Yeah,
I think.
Cool.
I never knew about the tracksuits, nor about this washing machine or the dryer.
That was brilliant.
The dressing room. I had never heard of any of that sort of stuff. It was, yeah, as you said, great to watch.
But he's as mean with money now, Mikko. Like, I mean, anyone that would know Mikko would know he's as tight as come. Like, he loves money. But, like, I mean, and one thing about the whole documentary as well, and, like, I mean, Mikko's 82, so you're not going to start painting this picture of him. But, like, there's no doubt people know Mikko didn't come to Kildare and Laois and Wicklow and these places and not get a few quid. Like, I mean, he did. That's the reality of it. But, like, there was no mention of that. But, like, I mean, I was thinking, if I interviewed Mikko now, would you really challenge Mikko on things now? He's an 82-year-old legend. You know, his voice is kind of going, you just don't want to say anything necessarily negative about him.
It would have gone against the general tone of the documentary as well.
It would have.
Yeah. Do you know, my favourite part was Colin Parkinson's going through one-on-one Laois training. He's got bearing down on goal. He's got both sides of the keeper. Just put it low and hard and What did you do? You just bobbed it up for him?
That was terrible. Goal scoring was never a big kind of quality of mine. I had so many qualities, but like Donald Trump here, I'm brilliant at a lot of things, but goal scoring I was only average at, and I even almost fell over. It was that bad. I don't know, Les, the pressure, the cameras were down there. Cameras are very rarely at training, so this is a whole new pressure. We're playing into the goals that the cameras are at. To be honest, I have no recollection of this. I'm only making this up. I just saw it on the other night, but it was funny that it was in. I got loads and loads of tweets. For some reason, people love me being put in my place. I have absolutely no idea why that is. One thing I did want to bring up about the documentary, lads, and was this meeting in the heat, because I got a good few tweets, and I actually almost fell out with some of the Leash players around this time because of this, and this was because the picture that is being painted, and it's by Mikko, and Mikko's hurt, by the way, his management tenure ended with us, and the picture that's been painted of Leash is not the reality, and I really want to point this out, because that period in Leash's football history is almost the greatest ever. And for people on the outside of Leash to look at that period, which is a period we're really, really proud of, now we could have done better, and for people to think, oh, they were only whippersnappers and they could have, you know what I mean? And Mikko was doing his best and they weren't committed and all this. That's bullshit. We absolutely committed to Mikko Dwyer. Like, when he came in, we ran laps. And, the Kildare lads will all know about this, and the Wicklow lads. Maybe he moved on a bit with Wicklow about the different laps and he'd send you off for seven. Now, they wouldn't be full laps. There would be like a circle of the laps. So you'd go around one goal, then you go around the middle part on the sideline and back, kind of like a circle. But he'd send you for seven, then you come back, he'd tell you a bit of a story, he'd build you up, your confidence, everyone would be hanging on his every word. Then he might say, go do four. He used to call them rounds. And then you might do another eight, and then you might do another three. And by the time that the physical running ended, you would be up around 35 to 40 of those rounds per night, right?
Were you timed on them?
No, absolutely weren't timed. But you would have one or two fellas that would really stretch it out. Like, lads really put it into them because you didn't want to be at the back, but there was no signs to them. Like, they weren't timed, as in the fella who won it the first night, if he won it with a worse time the second night, it looked like he was still doing, there was no signs behind it. But I wouldn't even criticise that. So for the first 2 years, we did everything, absolutely everything. We hung on his every word, all that. We won a Leinster title in his first year. We lost to by a replay against Westmeath, which really shocking performance both days by us. But this was at the end of the second year. Now, chairman of the football board told me that Mikko was having some issues with the county board over a payment from the second year, right? So this is on a Thursday night of training. This is in November, wherever. It's in the off-season. Mikko decides to fix a training session for Saturday night at 7 o'clock, right? So only 12 people showed up to this training session. People would have had plans. It was a last minute rescheduled training session at a terrible time on a Saturday night. So about maybe 12, 14, 16, I'm not sure how many people showed up to it. Mikko lost the head, said Leash players weren't committed, and walked out on Leash. Now, are you telling me that's because Leash players weren't committed, who dropped everything for that man, trained like dogs for 2 years, and didn't come to one training session that was a really late schedule, when a county board member told me that Mikko, the reality is that Mikko is really sore with the county board over something that was going on financially, and Mikko used the Leash players to fight his battle with Leash County Board. And then there was this big meeting in the heat and Mikko ended up coming back and all this. But again, the Leash players were being painted as this crowd of upstarts that are not committed, when the reality was not, that was not the reality. And I think it was really, really unfair. And I didn't go to the meeting in the heat because I wanted nothing to do with Mikko. We were talking on the phone, myself and other players, going, what a weasel to go and do that on us. To put that out into the public domain that we're not committed when we are. I didn't go to the meeting. I went travelling. I was supposed to be Leash captain that year. Port Leash had nominated me and I couldn't even look at Mikko to even be his captain, let alone give up going away for a year. So
that was 2005.
2005. I missed out on that full year with that. And I really got really, really annoyed with my Leash teammates to not have the backbone. I would have told him to go, good luck.
Yeah, yeah.
I would have been that annoyed about that we were painted in this manner. And all he did was use us as a pawn with his issues with the county board. And the chairman of the Leash football board at the time, Joe Dwyer, told me this. That's the reason he's done this. And I'm like, how are we accepting this?
Was he gone after the meeting then? Mikko.
No, that meeting was when he was coming back.
Oh, okay.
So right. He had gone. He had said that he was leaving us, and because we weren't committed enough. And then that meeting had national kind of spotlight shone on it because this was Mikko kind of coming back and laying down the law to the Leash players. Like it left a really, really bad taste. And the thing about Mikko is, people need to understand about Mikko. Mikko is a rogue. Like Mikko would see this as, being this cute Kerry whore. Like Mikko can hide behind a lot of this stuff. Oh well, that's Mikko now. She couldn't be up to Mikko, I don't think being a cute Kerry whore and this kind of perception can kind of cover up being a sneaky kind of, you know what I mean? Being cute is doing what he did there at all. That's not being cute. That was completely uncalled for.
Do you think, though, that it would have been more helpful if you had went to that meeting and voiced even these concerns?
I should have. I was captain of the Portlaoise club at the time, and we were in the All-Ireland semi-final, and we had just won the Leinster final, and I had planned on going travelling. It was up in the air that I was going travelling because Leash, we just won the Leinster in the football. So then I was up in the air, am I going to go travelling? Am I not? Because we have an All-Ireland semi-final. And I was half thinking, when this all happened, maybe I should have gone to that meeting and voiced it, but I know I would have been the only one at that meeting saying that and looking like, you know what I mean? Nobody backs you up against Mikko and the Leash team. Like, I mean, they all went to the meeting knowing the conversations we were having on the phone. They all showed up to the meeting. Yeah. Like, as in, oh, thanks for coming back. Despite the conversations we're all having privately. Yeah. And then the gas thing is, Mikko wrote the book and he slated Leash in the book again. Like, 3 or 4 Leash players went to the book launch.
Yeah.
Like I'm genuinely, it's affected my relationship with these fellas because I'm fuming with this. Because no matter what way that golden period in Leash's history is looked upon outside of Leash, wouldn't have done so much better if it wasn't for those lads' commitment.
Yeah.
And it's such a lousy way of looking back at our the commitment levels we gave him.
I was about to say, did he question your commitment? Because as he was alluding to with Kerry, and I think Kildare as well, I know he was saying with Kerry, he had them in for like 27 training sessions consecutive. I think he said the same for Kildare, which is, you know, some people might admire it, but that flies in the face of any, you know, sort of best practice. So like, it's nearly ridiculous to be asking for that commitment, but he seemed to be asking that from Leash as well. Was he?
Yeah, we didn't really do that many training sessions consecutively, but we trained hard when we were with him. But it was still back in the day, Mikko would have just trained on a Tuesday and Thursday night and had a match at the weekend, and that was our training. There was no strength and conditioning, no nothing. And that was the point that I've always made about Mikko and the end. And this is the point he's trying to make of us trying to tell him what to do. We were still doing laps in the sixth year with Gerry Loftus, fifth year, and we never complained once. We did all the laps. We never once complained about his training methods. What we asked him in the sixth year was, can we do strength and conditioning? Armagh are huge now. I said, Armagh had beaten us twice in All-Ireland quarterfinals, I'm pretty sure. And we couldn't compete with them physically. And we said, Mikko, Fergal Byron had gone away and sourced a rugby league strength and conditioning coach. I said, Mikko, can we do weights with this fella? No. You won't tell me what to do. We're eating fries in the Red Cow before championship matches, and we said, can we have a dietitian? Everyone else. See, we were all in college and we were hearing different stories from different friends we had about the setups everywhere else.
Yeah.
The unfortunate thing was the time that Mikko was over us. The game was changing massively. The preparation was changing massively. He was so slow to embrace that change. We wanted to maybe move with that change. He didn't. And then he likes to paint the picture that we were telling him how to train a team. We weren't. That's the unfortunate thing. And then when he went to Wicklow, he did strength and conditioning. He did dietitians. He did all the things that we were asking him to do. But that's a couple of years, you know, of him hearing it. But when he initially... when this change initially started, he didn't necessarily want to go with it. So like, I mean, I may go off this now because I'm going to spend too long talking about it. But it was really, really disappointing when I see that documentary the other night, and I was really enjoyed it. And like, I mean, I had ups and downs with Mikko, and I like Mikko, but still don't like that he's carrying around that perception of Leash and putting it out there and people are just believing it. I don't like it. It's not fair.
What were you boys doing Monday and Wednesday though then? Like, you know, could you not have just gone pumped a few weights yourself anyway?
Maybe, yeah, I suppose. But like, I mean, this was the kind of a leadership group going, asking him to do that. Like, the whole panel weren't necessarily talking about that.
Yeah, not embracing it. But yeah, like, I remember Enda Gormley from Derry talking about even back in 93 that the players used to meet up themselves outside of training and do a bit extra. You know, so that was happening even back then when we thought that wasn't like,
yeah,
that wasn't.
Yeah. And like, I guess strength and conditioning was at such an early stage. Like, are you going to be doing the right stuff on your, you know what yeah. I mean? You kind of need a coach at that stage when you've never done it before. Like, even when Liam Kearns took over, like, we were completely raw and green about these weights. Like, we didn't know how to do them. So to go away and do them on your own is counterproductive. I remember actually down in Tralee in 1999, McGuinness was into the weights and he collected me one night and to go up and to do some weights up in the gym. So I says I go up with him. So I did everything he was doing, like these bicep curls and these bench presses. Genuinely, the next day I couldn't straighten out my arms. The bicep curls, my muscles had never felt like this before. I couldn't, when I push my arm down straight, it bounced back up into the bicep curl position. You know, you're kind of, you need a coach, you know, and you needed the manager to be on board with this as well. But I need to actually announce that Kieran Bergen is coming up on the show a little bit later, lads, and looking forward to hearing from him because, like, I mean, he paints a pretty bleak picture of what it's like to be in an inter-county squad. And Joe Sheridan was on, I was at Limerick Radio at the weekend, and a lot of his quotes were picked up and saying that fellas despise playing inter-county football. And, like, I mean, there's no right or wrong answer here because half the panel will absolutely love that commitment. And then there's another, maybe half of the other half will think, oh, this is tough. And then there's the final 10 that might go, Jesus, I'm really struggling here with my job, with you know, with the levels of commitment, with all the training. So when people hear from one fella saying that this is a great life, I love it, and then someone else saying that he despises it, the truth is somewhere kind of in between. Like, there's no right or wrong, I suppose. On a squad of 30 fellas, you're never going to get the same answer from everybody about what it takes to be an inter-county player.
Yeah, I mean, what, like, I don't, like, it is tough, but isn't that the deal? Like, if you want to play for your county, it's a lot of work.
It's a lot, yeah, but it's a lot of work. But I think there's other things, like, I mean, the training, how it impacts on the rest of your life, how it impacts on your job. Like, I mean, the hard train, like, I mean, I always have the reputation of being a bit of a chancer. I loved hard training. I wanted to train hard. I loved the feeling of going, I'm flying it. I don't think players care about training hard. They care about not getting a minute to themselves. They care about not having a minute with their girlfriend, with their family, not being able to go to a wedding, not being able to go or being on a drink ban for 3 or 4 months. I think that's what players complain about rather than the training. The fellas eat training up. They love the gym. They love the actual hard slog. In the shower after one of the hardest cardio sessions is the nicest feeling in the world in a nice hot shower. Everybody knows that.
A bit of grub afterwards.
A bit of grub after and you feel fresh and you feel fit.
Yeah.
And it's a lovely feeling, but it's the impact on your life. I think that's where the complaints are coming from now.
And and how healthy is it when players are consciously making career choices to facilitate their inter-county career as opposed to making a career choice that they might have made anyway? Do you know, and there's definitely the examples might be rare enough, but that's definitely happening as well. I think with Bergen, like, I saw some of the interview, he was raising some kind of issues around drink bans specifically, and I think you said something about, like, his car was spotted outside Coppers and he wasn't even drinking, but this was brought up. So, you know, you will find in panels that those are, like, those sort of nitpicky issues are brought up, and, like, you have to question then whether, like, a panel should be healthy enough that, like, players should know themselves that, like, what they can get away with and what they can't without having to be, you know, told.
Yeah.
But there are panels that you're going to have characters that'll get away with what they can, so because of that you have to kind of impose some rules.
It's worse though when players sort of go along with this sort of nonsense, like, and they feel like that it's helping them. Like, you know, it's not like a teacher's pet thing, but it is, like, they love getting caught up in this whole plaguing themselves almost, like, we're not going to do this, we're not going to drink, and you're not going to talk to anybody, and be quiet while we're stretching, like, you know.
That's
the most annoying stuff. All that, we are treated like a child, and you're getting text messages when you go home, and lads start thinking about the game, now start drinking water, now start eating. Like, you know, all that stuff is more, it's more of a mental torture than it is physical. Yeah, I agree with you, the hard work I don't think is an issue, but probably everything that comes outside it. Yeah, you would know better, will you?
Yeah, no. Well, you see, this is. I'm looking forward to talking to Kieran because I would have a lot of the same things. But like, I mean, I'm not a good example because I loved a social life. I'm the kind of fella who likes being out at the weekends, and I was single through a lot of my 20s, and I found that commitment on the. You have to stay in. That was the part that I found the most difficult. I also found some managers little things like being late, and Kieran mentioned this as well, and you have a yellow card for being late. I'm like, Jesus, stop. Like, I'm not a child. You don't understand. I've just sat in horrible traffic for the last 2 hours. I've rushed out of work at 5, asked permission could I get out of work early, then sat in Dublin rush hour traffic, got down here, I'm 15 minutes late, and now you're giving me shit. When another fella from Portlaoise just comes home from work, lies on the couch for a couple of hours, watches telly and strolls on up. Like, I mean, you know, this kind of thing, it can get on top of you a little bit. But listen, we'll talk to Kieran later on the show, because I want to talk about these January competitions, lads, because, like, I mean, there's a good few of them called off, and like, it was real amateur hour now. There's no point in saying anything else for matches to be called off bang on the time the ball was supposed to be thrown in, supporters in the grounds after paying money in, and these games are getting called off. Like, I mean, Christ almighty, if the pitch is rock hard an hour before the game, 2 hours before the game, it's not going to be playable. Like, I mean, you can't wait till the very last minute. And I saw the Connacht chair or secretary,
John
Prenti, saying that they were waiting for the sun to come up over the stand to thaw out the pitch. You know when the sun comes up over the stand, you know if that's enough time. Like, I mean, it was amateur hour. Now, they got a lot of bad press about refunds, and again, Prenti was quoted on this, and I think he was right. You can't give refunds on the day. Like, I mean, people throw away their receipt, throw away their ticket when they go in, and I do that all the time. Like, I mean, if you get your ticket, like, you're not necessarily thinking this game might get called off, I'm going to keep it. So you can't. So what they're doing is giving someone a ticket to go to any match that they want the next couple of matches, and, which is important, if people can't go to them and they... if they can't go to them, then they'll get a refund. So, like, I mean, I think that's fair enough. A week or two later, have you used your voucher? No. Well, then you get a refund. On the day, it would be a bit like the Wild Wild West, lads. Yeah. There'd be lads running around to 3 or 4 turnstiles. You know, like, this word will get around, lads. This is free money here.
Yeah. I think there was confusion at the time because that wasn't clarified until a couple of days afterwards.
Right, yeah.
And because the game was called off at, I think it was 2:05. Actually, I think Tyrone was meant to be at 2. And because Galway fans would have travelled, even Mayo fans would have travelled, like, for some places in Mayo, it might take an hour to get to McHale Park. So all in all, between the game being cancelled late notice and not, you know, there wasn't clarification on the actual refund policy until a couple of days later, I think that's why there was a bit of anger. But like, as Prenti said, it was GAA policy. I don't think you can ask for much more than that to get a voucher to go to a game again.
No, not at all. Like, I mean, and if you can't go to it, you'll be looked after. So like, I mean, there's not much of a better solution they could have come up with. But again, because they're not transparent and they don't have this organised on the day, and because they're messing things up by leaving it to the last minute to call off the game, again, the PR, it's a PR disaster for the GAA. Again, the amount of comments, grab all association, oh, they're robbing people, you know, they're not giving them their money back. That wasn't the reality, but they didn't actually have this in place to be able to save themselves the bad press.
Serves them right then away if we're going to a pre-season challenge match.
Well, here's another thing about that, because I've been given out about these January competitions about what kind of benefit you get out of them at all. And like, I mean, Christy O'Connor had a piece it was just before Christmas or after Christmas, talking about the level of training for hurling teams in December, and they're training 15 of 16 days, and like, Tomás O'Shea was tweeting saying, this is ridiculous, can you not enjoy yourself over Christmas? And like, I mean, I have sympathy for managers. If the season starts on December 30th, when are you going to get the work done? You know what I mean? Yeah. You have to train over Christmas if the season starts on January the 30th. Let's start the season in the middle of February or the start of February, and have that closed season in November, December, and then you're back in January for pre-season training, and you've got 5 or 6 weeks. That's more than enough to get your strength and conditioning and your cardio at a good level before the league starts. And would anybody have a complaint about that?
Yeah, a manager's there to manage the team and get them ready for the competition, not to fix the fixture problem in the GAA. Just change it all. Change the fixtures and then they can start earlier. I'm just repeating what you said.
Yeah, the one thing I did want to talk about that is this idea, and a lot of people say it to me when I complain about it on Twitter, is that, oh, sure, look at Niall Scully. He was discovered for Dublin last year in the Burn Cup. Mm. what a load of nonsense. Like, are you telling me Niall Scully, who's a player who ended up being on the team, you telling me Jim Gavin didn't know anything about Niall Scully, or Niall Scully wasn't going to get a league game before he got these three games in the Auburn Cup? What a load of nonsense. Like, I hate that idea. And I've played for 10 years with Laois, and I never once saw a player that wasn't known in Laois coming out of nowhere in the Burn Cup and going, Jesus, where's this lad? Like, I mean, everybody knows the players in the county that are good. Like, I mean, you don't need an Burn Cup to know that. And like, there's 7 league games. You can play 13 of your first team and try 2 new lads in every league game. And these new lads aren't going to be useless. They're going to be lads that, right, this lad's performing really well in club, or he's been a good under 21. So you can give over the 7 games, you give 2 new lads a game every game, you've got 14 new faces. You're given a proper league game too, and if they perform in them, give them a championship game. That's the way it works. You don't have to go, see, this is the thing, these January competitions, all these are good for is key. You know the way you have in different clubs around the county going, well, Jesus, our lad there now, he's well able to play a county, and they're on to the manager, and I know this happens, they ring the county board, they complain. So these January competitions are a way of the manager going, listen, we'll get a whole lot of these lads in that are useless, we'll let them play their way off the team, and then they won't make the panel. And in my experience, that's what January competitions were used for, is to stop these lads in these clubs banging on about these lads that are good enough when everybody knows they're not good enough. Give them these stupid game in January, shut these lads up, and they don't make the squad. That's actually what the benefit that they are.
That was the only reason I wanted to see the Mayo match at the weekend, because so many are away on the team holiday that they had no choice but to fill the team up with, you know, because I think there was only 3 from the All-Ireland panel last year that were available. But yeah, you're right, like, I don't think anyone's under any illusions that you're going to make this massive discovery that's going to make a big impact in
people reply to me on Twitter going, well, Niall Scully's proof that they're really good. Niall Scully's not proof. Niall Scully's an outstanding player that ended up being on the Dublin team. Jim Gavin knew all about Niall Scully from playing with Temple Oak. Like, I mean, he's obviously outstanding for Temple Oak if he's outstanding for...
Be a discovery for the fans, but not for the
manager. That's it. That's the perfect point. People who discover these players themselves as fans have heard of Niall Scully.
I saw him.
So it's you that's discovered this lad. It's not Jim Gavin that has discovered it.
Did you ever win an Auburn Cup?
No, that's why. We did one year, but again, as usual, I wasn't around that year.
That was a good year for Laois.
Do you know, I was thinking back on Mikko's time with Laois, which was a golden period in Laois's history, and I only played 1 year out of the 4 for Mikko for different reasons. Injury, I missed the whole first year championship. I played the second one. Third year, I was away travelling, and then the 4th year, relations between me, Mikko, and one of the selectors had gone so bad I didn't get a game at all. Isn't that? And when you look back at my career, it's just like, Jesus, 1 of 4 of the best year. You know, that kind of way, it kind of leaves you a little bit. 2003 to one to Leinster. I was 2004 was the only year I had played. So I was just, anyways, I talked a little bit too much about all that. The new kick out rule, lads, I haven't got to see Laois yet. I was going to see them last Sunday. True story, but my mother didn't have my dinner ready in time. Now, there's my excuse. So by the time I'd finished my dinner, it was 10 to 2, and then it was in Stradbally and not Port Laois, and I was like, I'll leave it off. But I wanted to blame my mother for not having the dinner. But I wanted to see how this new kick-out rule is going to work, because we know now that it's... they all have to go outside the 20-metre line, and it has to travel no less than 13 metres. And the reason I wanted to mention this, we'll obviously see it plenty in the league when we start really watching the games, is Pat Spillane was writing at the weekend, and he says, being a tad cynical, I cannot help but think that this rule change was introduced in an attempt to curb the influence of Dublin goalkeeper Stephen Cluxton. And I was just thinking, Pat, what are you on about? Like, the one goalkeeper in the country that's going to benefit from this is Stephen Cluxton. It's the goalkeepers that have to depend on tipping it to the cornerback because they don't have these arrows out to the 45s and arrows everywhere. Cluxton takes this kick out only because it's there. Cluxton, if that's not there for Cluxton, Cluxton is the best goalkeeper at doing other things. Like, it's Clark from Mayo that could struggle. He loves the little ones to the cornerback because he's not as good at these ones to the wings and ones, you know, he's not as accurate as them. The goalkeeper that will benefit from this rule change is Stephen Cluxton. To paint it in any other way, I can't comprehend it. So all these easy cornerback kickouts to the goalkeepers that are not good at kickouts, they can't do them now. So now Cluxton is in a rule change place now where he's the king. Cluxton's not the king of kicking it to the corner back, because everyone can do that. Cluxton's the king of picking a man out, and now everyone's going to have to pick a man out. So now he's completely in kind of his comfort zone.
Yeah, but don't think either that there's some genius thought process behind all this. Like, you know, I agree Cluxton is the one who's going to benefit from us, but I also would almost agree with Pat that it's like, why has it been brought in? Are people just getting annoyed because Cluxton is getting a handy kick out? Are they trying to sort of just...
Cluxton's not the only one that does that. Every goalkeeper does that.
It's usually the teams who win, and when they're doing it with ease and people start looking at ways to counteract. I remember talking to Sean Boylan before, and he was on the Football Review Committee, and he's openly saying in an interview that we're trying to get around the defence. Like, you know, we're trying to stop these teams defending. This is after Donegal won the All-Ireland, and it's like, there's a boy who's one of the most influential people in the game right now talking about how can we stop Donegal doing what they did to one another. And like, whatever you think of that, like, you know, that was sort of the initiation of them.
Well, see, you know, I don't think that's it. I don't think it's trying to stop teams that have won the All-Ireland. I think it's about the aesthetics of the game. And I think it's trying to keep the game exciting for supporters and showcase the skills. I would prefer to see Cluxton stick one into someone's chest on the run rather than dribble it across to Johnny Cooper. I think as a spectacle, we're not seeing the best of Cluxton, because obviously they do their stats and they go, well, we're guaranteed possession to Johnny Cooper, so let's dribble it to him. While Cluxton is the best at this, it's still not guaranteed. But the aesthetics of the game, like are we trying to tweak rule changes to make sure that game is as exciting and is as good a spectacle to watch for supporters? And I think that's why they've changed this rule. It's not like, let's find a way to stop Donegal winning, or let's find a way to stop Cluxton winning. It's, let's try to move the game on and make sure that the traditions of the game are kept honest and are kept there. Like Mick O'Dwyer, fetching. Like, he loves fetching. Everybody fell in love with the documentary, and Mikko loves fetching.
Yeah.
You don't see fetching as much because these dribbly cornerback kicks. So I think it's a rule change to keep that tradition alive. And if you love that documentary from Mikko, I see I'm going to put some guilt on you now. see what I'm doing here, Connor?
subtle.
Yeah, subtle. If you love Mick O'Dwyer, if you love Mick O'Dwyer, you have to love this new rule change, Connor.
No, I love Mick O'Dwyer, but
that's checkmate there now.
Oh, God.
Yeah, like, listen, it's a very, very good argument. But, like, cornerbacks like coming out with the ball as well. You know, there's hard to draw a line sometimes, I think, with these things. Like, I agree. Like, I don't think it's nice seeing Johnny Cooper picking up the ball, which a lot of times looks like he's picking it off the ground. Like, I don't think that's particularly amazing to watch. Sometimes I don't like making rules just to make things a little nicer to watch, because I think he still should have that element of teams can do what they want within the rules to win.
Yeah, you know? Well, within the new rules, see, now they can do everything they want within the rules. The rules have just moved a little bit. That's just the way it is. Listen, I'm very consistent in that any rule change, I'll embrace it and see what it's like, and if it's not good, we'll criticise it and it maybe should be reviewed. But I think the game should always be evolving, like rugby is. They're tweaking the rules all the time, and you know,
rugby's shite, like.
Yeah, but that's neither here nor there. But like, they're trying to keep it, because, like, I mean, rugby can be so bloody dull around the scrum and all this kind of stuff, and they're constantly trying to tweak that, and different rules around the breakdown. Here, listen, we're not going to talk about this here
to the hard yards.
Yeah, we'll finish up here, lads, on this. There's double headers now for ladies football, and this is something we spoke about on the podcast last year. We were questioning, why on earth is there a big game in Amore Park, in Park Talton, in Croke Park, and it's just one standalone game, there's no game before it, and why would you not play the ladies game before it? And finally the penny has dropped here, and obviously maybe these things are more difficult to negotiate because the Ladies Football Association isn't part of the GEA, and that's another thing I want to get into in a minute, is why on earth they aren't. But at least this is a bit of progress, and why not play your own county's game, ladies game, before the men's game? Like, it makes no sense, why not? Like, I mean, and I know a lot of the talk is now that the ladies game is growing in popularity, and like it is, but people often base that off the attendance to the All-Ireland final. But, like, I mean, the other games aren't attended anywhere near like that. You know, there's a lot of children going to the All-Ireland final, and the perception is that this game is on the crest of a wave and it's incredibly popular. But I'd be looking at the attendances of the other games rather than just this one showcase game where an awful lot of children, you know, go into it. Because, like, I mean, if you're looking at the state of the women's game, here's something I was reading during the week. Well, here's a couple of things. We know the Tyrone County Board charged the ladies in Tyrone, was it 13,000 for renting the pitches? Mm-hmm. We know that. We know that there was a huge publicity about the women having to fundraise for their holiday, and the men got a grant from Croke Park, because we all know that the GEA is awash with money and they can do that. And then the ladies didn't get anything off the Ladies Football Association because they don't have anywhere near the same clout or the same financial backing as the men's game. And then you have the situation in Offaly, where the Offaly Intermediate Footballers, only last week, the Offaly Ladies Intermediate Football Team are appealing to the clubs of Offaly to provide a ground for them to train this weekend. So, like, what kind of an embarrassment is that? That, like, I mean, the ladies have to actually ask publicly, can we have a pitch off some club? That's because they're on the outside. They're not part of the GEA. If they're part of the GEA, the Offaly's Ladies Intermediate Football Team are given a pitch by the county board and it's negotiated for them. These poor girls are publicly asking for somewhere to train. So, like, I mean, you go from the 46,000 in the All-Ireland final and all this, oh, look at this, look how great this is. And then you come those three examples of the renting the pitches, and you're looking at the Offaly Ladies Intermediate Team, and then you're looking at the girls trying to fundraise because they don't get anything off the Ladies Football Association. And I'm asking the question, I always ask it, why on earth are they not part of the GEA? They play GEA codes, why are they not part of the GEA? So to find out why, I sent an email to the CEO of the ladies game. So I asked her, why on earth are the Ladies Football Association not in as part of the GEA? And the reason I asked her, I said, because obviously there must be a really good reason, considering, you know, the negatives for the association in not being. And she went, we don't publicly comment on our relationship with the GEA. I trust you can understand our position. Now, I just, fair enough, Helen didn't want to give a reason. But why? What are the reasons for this, lads? Because all I see is negative outcomes from not being as part of the GEA. And I don't see any benefit that they can get. Number one, these girls are playing camogie and football, can't say we're members of the GEA. And they're playing GEA codes. Like, I mean, it seems to me like it's an ego trip from the management of the Ladies Association. And without any thought given to what it's like on the ground for the Offaly Intermediate Ladies footballers. And, like, I mean, they do, like, again, I think this All-Ireland final thing, 46,000, and of course that's great. But, like, I mean, don't be hiding behind that number, because that number is not the reality across the rest of the it's not like you're coming off semi-finals with 35,000 and this is just a one-off game where there's a huge promotion goes into it, and little get on board and loads of school children go to it, and almost too many that it's screaming, and alright, that's great and everything, but that on the surface, everybody says, isn't this going great? But then you look at the rent of the pitches, like I'm just after explaining, and the Dublin ladies, and then you look at the Offaly Intermediate ladies. It's not all healthy at all.
Yeah. And what keeps happening here is it's the ladies at the bottom of it all who are getting most affected, people who are in GAA clubs, and they start off playing GAA, and in Offaly, the Ladies Intermediate Football Final was at 9 o'clock on Saturday morning. Last year. Like, you know, like that's...
But that's because they probably don't have a pitch, and they're like, I mean, they don't have, like I said on the last podcast, they don't have a pasta piss in, so they don't actually have to do... Yeah. Like, it's madness.
The Westmeath Camogues, like, their final was moved from Cusick Park because the men's quarterfinal went to replay, and they said, well, this is going to be in Cusick Park, and then it's the Camogues that get screwed over with it. There's girls in some school in Westmeath who had to choose between playing... Like, this is an all issue, that the fact that football and camogie, ladies football and camogie, aren't linked either. So then they had to choose, like, between playing for Leinster Schools football or playing camogie with their club or whatever. You know, there's no structure with that.
It's outrageous. It's outrageous. And the fact that Liam O'Neill asked them, he offered them, he said, come in under the GEA. And they said no. Like, that's why I wanted to speak to Helen, to find out why is that the case.
Like, are they worried that they lose kind of some independence just looking at to the FAI women's team this year really badly treated. They had to go on strike, and I think that there was a lot of controversy over the rugby team as well. They were trying to appoint a coach, and then after the World Cup didn't go well, and after the World Cup a few of the women's team came out and said how badly like the organisation was set up, and both the FAI, both the ladies team in rugby and soccer are under the umbrella of the FAI and the IRFU. So I don't know, is that a thing that the LGFA are afraid that if they go under the banner of the GAA umbrella that they'll be overlooked in the same way? But like to me, the benefits that they'd get from collaborating with the GAA would outweigh the negatives that we're just thinking about.
They couldn't be worse treated now than they are.
Yeah. No, like, they'd have pitches. They'd have facilities. Yeah. Yeah. They wouldn't have this loggerheads. They wouldn't have to pay rent. They would have the incredible financial backing. And maybe if you had a subcommittee within the GAA with the ladies' management there, you know, like almost like, you know, the GPA is part of the GAA, so they get all the benefits, but they still have that little bit of autonomy that they're running their own show to a certain extent. I don't get it, and hopefully we'll get Helen on the show at some point in the future so that we can get to the bottom of this, just so that I can have it clear in my head as to why maybe this is the case. Right, listen, as this is the longest top of the show we've ever ever done. It's almost the whole show, never mind the top of the show. We'll be back with Kieran Bergen next.
Let's chill the beans. There still is a lot of work to be done yet. Just give us a small bit of time. Just give us a small bit of time. Let's chill the beans. But I tell you, give us a year and a bit. Just give us a small bit of time. Just give us a small bit of time. Let's chill the beans. Let's chill the beans. Beans. Let's chill the beans. Let's chill the beans. Beans. Let's chill the beans. There still is a lot of work to be done yet. Just give us a small bit of time. Just give us a small bit of time. Let's chill the beans. But I tell you, give us a year and a bit. Just give us a small bit of time. Just give us a small bit of time. Let's chill the beans.
All right, delighted to say recently retired Tipperary hurler and footballer Kieran Bergen is on the line now. Kieran, you had a pretty explosive interview in the Star at the weekend. What's the reaction to it been like?
Well, to be quite honest, I don't really follow social media. I wouldn't really be kind of keeping an eye on anything like that aspect. I read the article myself, all right.
Were you happy with it?
I wouldn't say it was that explosive, to be honest. The one thing I would like to reiterate and kind of get across would be that, I know in the article they did refer to, I suppose, socialising and drinking quite a bit. So just off the bat, anyone that knows me knows that I'm not actually that. I don't drink very little,
Yeah.
But it was more so kind of, I suppose, the attitude of the GAA, and it was kind of control of the GAA over an inter-county player, was more so the kind of point I was trying to get across,
That
aspect of...
Go on.
Really, the aspect really is, was that it's your entire life that's taken up, and it's the whole of mentality that you're constantly giving. Like, the ethos of the GAA is that from the second you're born, really, you owe it to your club to play. You owe it to your club, like, not to go drinking before games. You owe it to your county. You make the county set up that you have to constantly give to them. But there's very, very little in return, especially when you're putting yourselves under such scrutiny in the public eye, I suppose, towards performances and that. And don't get me wrong, look, I enjoyed every aspect of it. I do love hurling. And I know the article said if it was back again, I wouldn't pick it. But I do love playing hurling. And I just want to get that, I suppose, point across. It's the background stuff that I don't enjoy.
Yeah.
When you have to deal with constantly... I suppose your social life is completely put on hold, and your partner's social life. You can't plan holidays for, let's say, nearly 10 months of the year. You can't even say, right, we're going to go away for a weekend there, because your training schedule is only 4 weeks in advance and they continually change. And like, there's no real gratitude given back from an inter-county setup that if you had planned to go away for a night or two with your partner or your wife or girlfriend, whoever it is, they just turn around, they expect you to drop that, to change that. If you had a concert ticket booked, not to the matter, we weren't supposed to train more than we do now. There's no real consideration for the fact that you had something planned on a weekend off. And just you know yourself, there's very few weekends off as it is with inter-county setup. And I think with the current structure changing, inter-county players are going to have even less time to themselves.
Yeah, no, it probably will now because the year is condensed so much. But now, I just want to pick you up on one point because, like, I mean, everything you said in that article would be things I would have said before. So I don't want this interview just to be, you know, me agreeing with you and you agreeing with me and painting this picture, because there's another side to this where some players are more than happy to do that kind of thing. And, like, so I'm going to have to play a devil's advocate on a few different things here and to pick you up on a point that you said you don't get much back out of it. You have an All-Ireland medal, you know, and you've played in that All-Ireland final in front of 80,000 people, and there's an awful lot of people around the country that would say that is an awful lot to get back out of it.
It is an awful lot to get back out of it. Look, don't get me wrong, it's brilliant to win an All-Ireland, you know what I mean, and a lot of inter-county players probably never get to win an All-Ireland if they're from some of the weaker counties. But at the same time too, you know, for the level of commitment that went in that year, like, some people say, oh yeah, that's great, you get out, and it is very, very enjoyable to play in front of, you know, millions of viewers worldwide and 82,000 or 83,000 people live in the stadium. But at the end of the day, to me, like, if you were to ask me, was it worth it? It was worth it for the medal, but the sacrifice that you had to give to get there, it's only worth it if you win it. And you know what I mean? If you're not winning them regularly, I just really, really don't see how it's worth being involved in the inter-county setup for the level of commitment and the level of your life you have to put on hold. You know, like, everything, your career is, there's so many lads I talk to. And you know what I mean? They're basically, they've gone, done their degree in, we'll say, just business or accounting or something like that. And then they're coming back and they're saying, well, look, I'm actually going to change and I'm going to go back and do teaching because the lifestyle suits.
Yeah.
You know, it suits the inter-county for an amateur sport. Like, it's not clear and correct. Like, people shouldn't be doing that. And I suppose I had the kind of, perspective of, I've done it the opposite way around to most people. You know, I didn't get ingrained, I was involved in every setup growing up, you know, minor club football, under 21 club football, county setups. And then when I was 18, I was so sick of it, I was involved in my college as well. Like, there's no break, there's no relay between the different teams. I was so sick of constantly going that I decided to kind of pack it in. I said I'd go to America, and now obviously I hadn't planned for going such a long extended trip, but you know, I was never really ingrained in that whole culture of you owe this to your county and you owe this, because it is there with the older generation, you know, and the GAA was so ingrained into them. It was such an integral part of the culture in every club growing up that, I suppose, how would you say it now, the culture forced people to kind of go down that route, and you say, right, okay, I'll postpone travelling, postpone this job that I got offered in such a place because of the honour it is to play for Tipperary. Now, don't get me wrong, it is an honour, but at the same time too, there has to be something given back to the players, to the fact that they're actually getting something back out of it. You know, a lot of people say, oh, okay, would you not have stayed with the hurlers last year if, you know, you couldn't have went on and won Ireland? To me, I was looking at maybe watch another 80-90 sessions. That's 5-6 hours involved in every session. Like, that's an awful lot of commitment just to be involved. And I don't think people realise this, like, the level of commitment and the level of the lack of time off you get to yourself when you're involved in the inter-county setup.
Are you...
And to be getting...
Are you kind of, you know, saying a lot of this based on your last year with the footballers, where you wouldn't have been a top team, you wouldn't have had, you know, ambitions to win an All-Ireland, yet the commitment would have been the very same and you would have been on and off the team? Is this kind of coming from that rather than being with the Tipperary Hurlers, where that commitment is given with the ambition of being in Croke Park in front of 80,000 people? Or, you know, do you see both as equal?
Look, it wouldn't have anything to do with the footballers. Being honest, when I was called in 2013, it was an issue for me straight off the bat, you know, and a lot of players in the team would have known it. I've had no problem voicing my opinion and saying that it was pretty much ridiculous, the level of commitment that they're asking of inter-county hurlers and footballers. And that was, for me, being on a team that was actually, we competed in, you know, Munster Finals, All-Irelands in the same year, so it wasn't really, from the get-go, I thought the commitment level was just ridiculous. And not so much even equipment level, because, you know, you have your own personal standards. You want to strive to actually achieve,
yeah,
you know, certain things. So winning Ireland was one of them. And, you know, I do go for runs most days on my own anyway. And a lot of time I was actually told to kind of tone back and stop training as much on our off days. But at the same time, too, it's the other aspect of this control that the management and control that the GA have over players, as in telling them what to do and telling them that, oh, yeah, okay, we've training camp, just take off work. That's it. And there's very little appreciation at the end of it. You know, if you're kind of a fringe player, you're so disposable to a setup, like, and they're still giving the same commitment. And to me, it felt wrong. It felt really, really wrong. And like, I would have been a starting player, so it wouldn't have been, people would say, oh yeah, but you're playing and that, so it shouldn't be that much of an issue. But it's still at the same time, to me, you're looking at the broader picture. At players, 99% of players, I just don't think it's a fair setup the way it is.
Yeah, what's the solution here, Kieran? Right, because, like, I mean, you hear a lot of supporters going, "Well, if you don't want to give the commitment, you know where to go. Nobody's putting a gun to your head, you know." And I hate that attitude, because, like, I mean, that's completely in keeping what you're saying. Players are just disposable, they're pieces of meat, and it's like your feelings are taken into consideration. That a lot of players absolutely love the game, are good enough to play inter-county, but struggle a little bit with that level of commitment. And supporters' attitude often is, well, if you don't want to give it, you know where to go and someone else will do it. You know, how do we get past that kind of an attitude, where a panel is 30 people, so there might be half the people that have no problem with the commitment, but that doesn't mean that the other half, or, you know, the other third, are really struggling with that?
Yeah, and look, I'd be honest, I would say the majority of county hurlers and footballers, they're not too bothered with the commitment, you know what I mean? Because they're kind of looking to achieve and to better themselves, the commitment issue isn't always going to be the kind of the real concern, because, you know, they want to be keeping fit and they want to be playing their best, they want to be recognised by the public, supposed to be doing well. So they're willing to put in the commitment, but it's the appreciation of the GAIC for that commitment is very, very small and very, very poor. You know, like, if you look at an All-Ireland final day or any much final day, sometimes the way I was trying to describe it is, if you look from the outside in, right, which is what I've probably done being an American, being abroad, you'd be looking back, if you try and explain this to any other foreigner or anyone from outside of Ireland that stadium's full with 82,000 people all paying 80 euros to take it in. There's 2,000 people working in the stadium that day, all getting paid. And the guys on the field are getting absolutely nothing. You know, no token appreciation, no, you know, gesture, or even to something small, like to be handed a kind of a token after the game and said, look there, lads, that's for participating in the game and competing, and your level of commitment, if it was only something small, like 1,000 euros each,
yeah,
it's still something, you know, that would go. Whereas it's not that way at all. It's you finish thing, and anyone who's in college or who's a student or something, like, they're taking either time off work or taking time off college, and at the same time, they, you know, people think that because you're in a kind of setup, like, money has to come from somewhere. It doesn't just grow on trees. Like, you know, where are you supposed to go out celebrating, or how are you supposed to enjoy life? Because you're involved in an inter camp setup, you're obviously nearly out every Saturday and Sunday, so, like, you can't hold down a part-time job.
That was an interesting thing, yeah. You know, students can't actually work.
You can't, like, because your time is taken up. You can't have, a part-time job working in the bar at 2 or 3 in the morning, because you're not going to be able to train properly the next morning. And there's no real consideration for this. I know that the GPA are doing good work and they're trying to get, you know, increased money and for expenses and stuff like this, but as I mentioned in the article, like, sometimes getting your expenses off the county board is extremely difficult.
Yeah, but Kieran, I was surprised you were saying that in the article, because, like, I mean, the GPA set up, was it back in 2001, and trying to fix these kind of issues, and now it's 2017, and I was surprised. I had some issues getting expenses, but in fairness, it improved a lot. But I couldn't believe it in a county like Tipperary, a big county like Tipperary, that in 2017 you're still having issues getting your expenses. Like, I mean, do you report this to the GPA, or what do the players say about this?
Well, look, I suppose it's different for some players who really need expenses, and last year or two I haven't really, you know, I've been working full time, so expenses haven't been a priority. But where I really noticed it was when I was in college, you know. And I remember I was at a meeting in the, I think when you're, you know, if you get a scholarship for college or something, you have to attend this meeting twice a year or whatever. So it was in the up in Croke Park. But like hearing stories from the other counties there, like, and you know, they were horrifying compared to Tipperary. Like Tipperary wasn't bad. Now I must say, we were probably leagues ahead of the rest of them as regards expenses.
Right.
Even though at the time I thought it was poor myself. But like, you know, there should be no reason why you should have to call and ask and maybe, you know, have to wait 2 months to get expenses. Like, you know, I just feel like you're going begging. You're going begging for your expenses. You shouldn't have to do that. You actually do feel like a little child kind of saying, oh, can I have that? And, you know, yeah, maybe next week or, you know, or this lad's not in the office. And it's just one excuse after the other. And it shouldn't be like that. You know, when you're given so much, it should be a case of, yeah, you should be just handed this without having to ask for it.
Yeah, yeah, that's not the reality with some county boards. You made a very interesting comment, I thought, about winning the All-Ireland and not having a minute to yourself to actually have a drink on your own, that the celebrations were so structured that you had to be here, there and everywhere, and then you started work the following Tuesday. So by the time Monday night came, you actually, like, I don't know, I just have in my head you win an All-Ireland, it's the greatest feeling ever, but you actually didn't paint that picture at all.
Look, it's a great feeling, like, you know what I mean? If you're training that hard for something all year, and, you know, there's a certain release there that you've done what you achieved and set out to achieve at the start of the year. So there's that kind of, I suppose, ecstasy in your body anyway, that you're kind of overjoyed. But you're on their clock, you know what I mean? You come down and obviously you have your celebrations, you have your periods of 15, 10 minutes, but you are on the county board's clock or you're on the GA's clock because you have to be straight back to the hotel. Then you have to go to the banquet. You know, everyone's the TVs are going to be there, so it's structured. You're having a drink and you're there with your friends, but you're not doing it on your own terms. You know, you have to be there.
Yeah.
Then, you know, obviously you get released later on that night and you go out for a few drinks. But next morning you're up and you have to be on your clock. You're getting on a bus to go back to Turles. You're a couple of hours there in the stadium, you know, meeting the fans and signing, you know, jerseys and stuff and hurleys or whatever it is you're signing. Then you're back on a bus out to wherever the captain's from, Bursley in our case. You have another, you know, he's to go on stage there. Like, well, I think it was near 12 o'clock by the time we got back into Turles. At that point, you know, how are you really supposed to enjoy? That was the first time I had the giant drink. Now, a lot of players would have taken off Tuesday and maybe Wednesday, or, you know, maybe some of them more. But, like, oh, I didn't have that luxury. It was only after setting up a company at the time, and I really, really couldn't afford to take off work, as in, time-wise, I just didn't have the time to take off. And I just thought it kind of dwindled down, and it was a distant memory come Wednesday, you know?
Yeah.
And it wasn't really what I envisioned it,
yeah,
being, you know.
It's in keeping with the whole idea of control, that you win in All Ireland, but you're still under orders, that this is where you go and this is what you have to do and this is the timetable that you keep. So not that's your life right throughout the year. And, like, I mean, you know, I do agree with you that the control is gone to levels now where it's just too much, and the pressure that if you're to go to that concert that you're letting 30 people down. Like, it's the emotional pressure that's put on you to not step out of line at all now, that it's because you're going to let, you're letting your county down. Not only you're letting your county down, you're letting all your teammates down, and you're letting everybody down, because if you make a mistake like that, you could be just given the bullet.
Yeah, well, look, that's exactly it. At the same time too, you know what I mean, I do want to reiterate the fact that when you're involved in a setup, you do want to give that for your other teammates, and you do want to do the best for your county. But that's not the real aspect that annoyed me about it, you know. It's the lack of appreciation that you get for doing it, you know. It is great to have, like, you do, I suppose you are a bit more recognisable, you know, and it's always nice when fans come recognise you on the street, or, do you know what I mean? But at the same time, it's kind of the organisation, I feel, is letting the players down, that they're asking for more and more. Like, when I went in 2013, you had, I suppose, X amount of transitions and meetings, but I found every year there was someone new added to the backroom team, and there was an extra meeting. Like, you're training 3-4 days on the pitch, you're another 2-3 days in the gym. In the level of commitment going up, you couldn't actually do your gym on your own, which to me was a massive trust issue that makes into everything had to be group gyms.
Right.
You know, so you actually have to drive in and out to Turles nearly almost every night of the week. You know, whereas a lot of time it suits me to do my gym during the morning before work, or, you know, you get out and you could structure your day. If you're constantly having to be somewhere at a certain night, it's so mentally draining, as in you have to be in towards that sleep. So if I come home from work at 5 o'clock, oh, I can't really relax or unwind because I have to, that hour, hour and a half before I have to go in and be in a certain place for the gym, you know. And it just that level, it's constantly, it's very mentally draining. And then to turn around and just the GA, I feel like there's no real incentive or reward outside of winning an All-Ireland or representing your county. And I think the GA are really, really exploiting this fact in players that, well, if you don't do it, just someone else will be there to do it for you. Like,
yeah. And would there be many people that think like you, Kieran? Because, like, I mean, people listen to this interview and go, oh, well, Kieran Bergen, and I think it's very interesting that you say you're really good to train and that you wouldn't be a big drinker. You just think that you should be allowed, you know, when you want. Would many on the panel, the reason I ask you this, because I know players that are involved at the moment can't really say it, can't obviously say the things you're saying because it's going to reflect badly on them and the relationship with the management. Because I saw John McGrath saying in The Independent today, I think you hear of some panels where drink bans do go on, where they're just completely told no. I think that's wrong. Like, we get our few nights out here and there every so often. So he's saying that Tipperary hurlers do get a few nights out during the year. So I'm just interested to know how many people do many other intercounty hurlers or footballers think that way on the squad?
Look, they'll all tell you that their true opinions, as you said, that when you're, you know, obviously when you're out under scrutiny of the public eye. But, like, look, to be fair now, actually, under Michael's current setup, like, the drinking wasn't really, you know what I mean? The current Tipperary setup there's no real issue with drinking, obviously. And, like, most lads know themselves if you're not going to go drinking, you know what I mean? If you've championship coming up.
Yeah.
But, like, there's just certain instances that I won't say. But, like, you say, you know, certain, with a, maybe if you have a family wedding or you have, like, a family due or something, like, having to be told that you can't go drinking as is, you know, if you don't have a game for 3-4 weeks, in that kind of scenario, that level of you having to be told, when you're that far out from a game, like, having just three, four drinks even going to kill anyone. And I think this is the real problem with GA. This whole mentality that you know, you can't be drinking this far away, we're only a couple of weeks out from championship. Like, two or three drinks never hurt anyone. But when you're telling someone you can't, it's just kind of, I think Eddie Brennan touched on it there yesterday as well. It's, this is why there's such a binge drinking culture in GAA, because you're on hold for weeks and weeks and weeks, and then you're finally in, you know, you're allowed to go out after a game, so you go out and you nearly poison your body for 2 days.
Yeah.
You know, it's, I wouldn't say, like, because I don't know, Mike Ryan set up there now in Tipperary. It's not bad, and he was very accommodating after games. And, you know, obviously some lads do enjoy going on two or three days, so that's limited, all right, which is no bad thing, really. But it's other aspects, you know, it's drinking is only one of the small aspects of the whole setup that they have control over you. But it's other things. To me, it was work as well. Like, I had a couple of issues there with work and being late, and I travel over and back to England quite a bit. So you almost feel guilty. Like, if you have something, you know, if I have a meeting over in England, I actually genuinely feel guilty asking for the time off. And I know myself, I often organise flights early in the morning at 5 o'clock and flew back in that evening just to be back for training. And you wouldn't really get any thank you for it.
No.
No, even though I pay everything out of my own pocket, you know, you don't get any gratitude for it. It's just expected, yeah, you either do it or that's it. But you're kind of sliding down the pecking order.
Yeah, that's the reality of it. Even things you were mentioning in the piece, like timekeeping, like you could be a little bit late to training and you're getting a yellow card. Like, it's very, very primary school kind of way. And I saw that in Leash as well. And I was mentioning at the start of the show, I'm commuting from Dublin down in rush hour traffic, and someone else that lives in Port Leash is driving 5 minutes after relaxing on the couch for an hour, and I'm 15 minutes late and I'm getting this yellow card, or this, I'm being disciplined, when the reality of what I went through to get the training is nowhere near what a lot of other lads went through to get the training.
Yeah, exactly. You know, so and look, that, as I said, I was never actually late for training. I would have been always there on time, like, before it starts. But you know, to me, I've been fed, like, I'm a grown adult, and to be kind of treated like that when you're after bending over basically backwards to kind of rush out of work and, you know, come off the side and leave a certain situation for no real gain. You know what I mean? If, like, financially or career-wise, you're not really gaining anything by leaving that situation. And then to be basically told, well, it's not good enough, you know, you need to be on time. It's, you know, to say, like, you have to talk to someone as a human rather than talking to them like you're disposable, and it doesn't really matter what your situation was or your circumstances. That's it. Just be on time, like.
Yeah, and this like, I mean, this isn't meant as any sort of hatchet job on Eamon O'Shea, Michael Ryan, or Liam Cairns or anything like that. It's more of a bigger picture thing, and because every county is the same, Tipperary aren't any different. In fact, I'd imagine those three managers would be on more of the easygoing side of the scale than other ones around the country.
Oh no, they definitely would, and that's why it was never really a personal attack on, you know, any of my past managers or like any of the Tip setups. I just noticed it, I suppose, because I was always looking from the outside in. And then when I got inside the bubble, you kind of get, you know, enthralled in this lifestyle and this commitment, and, you know, this is expected of you. But I did find it very, very hard when I was in there to kind of say, like, if you want to go, my wife wants to go for dinner on Friday night and you've trained Saturday morning, like, you're conscious of the fact that you can't be out really in a restaurant or bar after 10:30, because you know it's going to be reported back, and then you're kind of dealt with, like, if it's said to you, you feel almost guilty for being out, you know, and being in the public, and it takes an awful toll on relationships. And I suppose this is why the partners have when it comes to team holidays and stuff, the partners probably the ones that deserve it more than the players themselves, you know, because it's their, finally they get to do something with their other half. And it's that more aspect and that control that you really have to watch every single thing you do. And I know that they don't want players and they're talking to the media either, because they don't want leaks and stuff like that. But it's just the organisation and the way it's set up. Like, and a lot of the article that I gave the other day was kind of mainly towards the club scene and club players as well, because at the minute the club set up, and I was kind of dreading coming back there this year for the first time ever, because I've been looking at it for the last couple of years and really saying, I don't know how our guys in the club are actually training all year round for such little games and not knowing when their games are going to be on. Like, I don't know if this year is going to be different. I know it is. I think most of it's going to be run off, but we've been at a 20-week period in the summer that we were free. But, like, I was dreading it. I was actually dreading coming back playing club this year, because it's just unknown, and you're still supposed to give, you know, we won't say the same level of commitment, but a certain standard of commitment to your club, and you don't really know when your game's going to be. It's held up on the county setup.
Yeah, so no. Listen, there's a lot of issues. Finally, what would you like to see happening, Kieran? Like, I mean, do you have a solution for all these things, or how can it improve, or like, what is it gone too far now to kind of roll back?
It's hard to say, but like the one opinion I've always been of is, if you make your county team, you know, you have to. I think they should be separate. County and club should be separate, and it should just go down the same route as rugby and other sports, because it's extremely unfair to 99% of the whole organisation. Like, it's supposed to be a grassroots organisation, but yet the club players suffer more than anyone. You know, they don't know when their games, and everything's held up on the inter-county setup. So they can't plan a holiday, they can't plan to do anything. They're the exact same as us, and it's that not knowing, which is, to me, it's ridiculous. Like, if you look at it, I just think it's absolutely ridiculous. And I know some clubs are going to get hit harder. Our own club, so we've nearly 11 involved between, you know, football and hurling at different age groups. So we'd be extremely hard hit. But at the same time, too, you have to remember there's 11 players there training with our club all year, playing the county league games, playing this, that, and the other. And we come back to that championship game, and 11 of them are basically put on the bench after training all year and been playing wing back or centre back or wherever it is they're playing. And they're just sidelined straight away. And
yeah, to me, I'm not sure. I'm not actually sure that will ever come in. I can see the logic behind it, but I'd actually say you'd be very surprised at how many players would choose the club over the county if they, if they actually had to choose.
Yeah, see, look, it's not my place to be kind of reorganising the GAA. I have enough to be doing, but it does look, it's something they'll have to look at in time, or they'll have to restructure the inter-county setup, because at the end of the day, some players want to be playing during the summer, and they want to be playing, when it's enjoyable, they don't want to be playing in October, November, when the weather off the season is good. But at the same time, I don't really know what way they're going to do it, and I wouldn't be under the impression, I suppose, that they're going to change anytime soon either with the county setup or breaking away. But it's the only real logical explanation I can see at the minute, that you just have to maybe give more incentives to go with your county. And obviously, I don't know what way they'd structure that, but certainly incentives, maybe tax breaks or something that would make it worthwhile going with your county. The big issue there you have in is with your players that are fringe players. You know, if you're only a fringe player 26, 27, and you're there in the training panel, but you're not quite on the panel, they're probably not going to pick the county because they don't know whether it's going to be beneficial for them to do that. And then they look bad in their clubs they have.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe if you looked at even transfer markets, like you said, the panels can only be changed during a certain time of year. That way, if you make a panelist that year, you know you're going to be there till a certain period. You know you're going to be there till April, and then there might be a 2-week period where you can bring in out players in April, and that way you could change the panel for the summer. But it's just, there's too much chop and change. People are too disposable. Like, I know players that have come back from Australia on the promise of, I suppose, getting a shot at the thing, and they know themselves now, looking back on it, they were only basically called back to fill up numbers and fill up gaps.
Yeah, it's not actually ideal. So what will you do with Tipperary now? Will you still follow the team and you're a Tip supporter now, or will you kind of a little bit bitter towards the whole thing and kind of take a break from?
I'm not.
You're a big GAA man.
Yeah, I'm not bitter at all. I love Ireland. I love playing Ireland. I am happy to be stepped back from the whole organisation, the setup, and I suppose the control they kind of have over your lifestyle. It's nice to have a bit of free time and that. But no, look, I'd be the first one in Crow Park shouting on Tipperary during the All-Ireland, football or hurling. So that's never going to change, you are who you are, and you're from where you're from. But there's definitely no bitterness there towards anyone. It's just, I suppose you feel a bit let down when you step away from it. You feel a bit let down by the actual GAA in general, that you're not really appreciated, and they'll milk as much as they can out of you, and when you're done, that's it, good luck.
I think maybe a lot of ex-players will definitely identify with that last comment. Anyways, listen, Kieran, thanks very much for giving us your time, and all the best in your retirement.
No problem, Colm.
Great stuff from Kieran Bergen there. Listen, that's all we have time for this week. We will be back next Wednesday, so we'll talk to you then. Good luck.
Yet it took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we put them back in their asses for 10 years.
The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is sponsored by AIB, proudly backing club and county.